today again, bringing you episode 57 of the top 10 rated podcasts created for authors by authors. Write your best book. And first, let me say, before I get into my spiel, I sound like a dying frog because I have sinus infection, but I'm powering through because this episode, you all have to hear. So this week, we have one of the hottest authors out there right now, Lisa Unger, on the show for a short discussion. But this week isn't the only one that we feature an established, best-selling author and have entertaining and insightful discussions with them on different topics that impact authors daily. In fact, this entire second season of the podcast, we're working on filling each week with great authors, most of which you have heard of or you have read their wonderful books. And if for some reason there's an author on one week that maybe you haven't heard of yet, this is a perfect way to also learn about new to you authors and pick up even more amazing books to inspire your writing. But the only way to make sure you don't miss a single episode of Write Your Best Book is to hit that subscribe button. And don't worry, we don't blow up your phone daily or anything like that. It's Apple doing its thing. But even then, it's only one weekly notification telling you that the next episode is live and ready for you to listen to. And while you're there, be a dear and leave us a review and a rating. These two things help us rank higher and reach more authors around the world with our little show. Last year, we ended up with 25,000 unique downloads. Let's see if we can beat that number this with season two. Now, I want to take another minute here, if that's okay. And on a side note, I know that this season's episodes have sounded a little off when it comes to the microphone. I just changed offices. This office is three times the size of my last office with vaulted ceilings, hardwood floors, and all the things you don't want when you're trying to record a podcast. But we're working on getting better equipment, more soundproofing, etc. So I know I've seen some comments say it sounds really bad on there. I know. We're aware, but I'm doing the best I can, and probably in the next week or two, we'll have things back in shape. So thanks for staying with us. Okay, so this week, our topic for discussion is creating protagonists who are realistic, relatable, and even complicated. It isn't hard to understand why we would want our protagonists to be realistic or even relatable, but complicated? Why complicated? Well, that's because the best characters ever written have had several layers to them, and we never quite see that last or the bottom layer until the end, or sometimes even in the twist. It's only then that we're able to look back and realize that this character slowly revealed his or her true personality over time, one layer at a time. These are the characters that stay with the reader long after they put the book down, and thus, it's what you should strive for when developing your characters. No one likes flat, one-dimensional characters, and as authors, we can spot the flat characters much easier than we did before, don't you think? Flat characters are no fun. They can't make us feel anything, and they leave our readers' minds the minute they exit stage right. Something to avoid entirely. But how exactly do we go about creating these amazing characters, especially our protagonists, and make them stand apart from every other protagonist that's already been written? Well, that's what we're going to talk about today with our super special guest host, award-winning suspense novelist, Lisa Unger. Before I share with you my discussion with Lisa on writing compelling protagonists, let me tell you a few things about her that you may or may not know. Lisa's books have been published in 26 languages and have sold millions of copies worldwide. Because of this, as well as the fact that her books are super twisty, dark, compelling, multi-layered, Lisa has become widely regarded as a master of suspense. She combines her knowledge of human nature and even trauma and fear to create novels that have earned her a reputation as one of the most skilled practitioners of psychological thrillers around today. All right, so Strand Magazine says this about Lisa. Her character-driven novels explore the vast gamut of human experience, delving into the psychology of both protagonist and villain, often blurring the lines between the two. Lisa's latest novel, Confessions on the 745, is far and away the best suspense novel I've read in ages. So having the chance to sit down and talk to Lisa for this week's topic of discussion was a bit intimidating at first. But let me tell you, as you'll hear, Lisa's genuine kindness shows through when she speaks, and it took me no more than 3 minutes to feel completely comfortable in her presence. Something you guys don't always get from such well-known established authors, I think. And I cannot wait for you guys to get to know her a little better too. So without further fanfare, I give you my discussion with Lisa Unger. Okay, guys, we are back at Write Your Best Book, the podcast, episode 57, and I am trying to contain my excitement and my total inner fangirl, because as promised, we have in the studio today, Lisa Unger. She is a prolific and just totally awesome suspense author that I've admired. I know many of you do too. She's here today to talk about creating complicated, realistic, and relatable protagonists. So first, let's welcome Lisa. Hi, Lisa. Thank you for joining us in on the podcast today.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, we're thrilled to have you. So it's a good match. All right. Well, let's just go ahead and kick it right off. Lisa, I have already told my listeners the fun facts. So they know you're an Edgar Award winning author, all the amazing best book list that you've been on, and the awards you've been nominated for and won. So if you don't mind, why don't you start by telling my listeners a bit more about you, your writing journey, your books, whatever you want us to know.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been a writer all my life. I've been a writer since I was a kid. I don't remember a time in my life before I defined myself that way. And so all writers are readers first. You know, that's where we fall in love with story in the pages of somebody else's book. And my mom is a librarian. So, you know, I got my just love of story from her, not just books, but film and theater and all of that. Like, that's really been like her, sort of her lifelong passion. And so I kind of got that from her. And so I was a reader first. And I think most writers have a moment as a reader where you think, oh my gosh, you know, if I can be so moved by, you know, what I'm reading and by characters and by story, can I also do this? Can I also move somebody with my words? And so, you know, I had that question and I kind of asked it of my dad, you know, who's an engineer, and his answer was like, no, that's actually not a job. People don't do that. And you should be focused on, you know, figuring out what you're going to do with your life, not that. So, you know, here's the deal. I've got you covered through 4 years of college, and you know, you could take basket weaving for all I care, but, you know, at the end of those 4 years, you're off the payroll. So not surprisingly, even though I've been writing all my life and most of my education was focused on writing and literature, I, you know, when I graduated, you know, I had like a bunch of teachers who really super encouraged me. My mom kind of knew too that I was a writer, but when I graduated from college, I mean, I really just didn't have the confidence to go for it. You know, like I just didn't have that. So I did the closest thing to following my dreams that I could, which was like going into publishing. So I went into publishing right after college. I worked in publishing for almost 10 years. And, you know, I think it was during that time that, you know, I kind of gave myself, or I found during that time, permission to be what I was, because I kind of learned, in fact, that people do this for a living. So all the while I was working my big publishing job, which got bigger and bigger and bigger. And then the time I spent writing got smaller and smaller and smaller until I wasn't writing at all. So I had like an epiphany one time in my late 20s. I realized I was with the wrong guy. I was, you know, dedicating about 110% of myself to a job that I didn't love. And that the only thing I had ever wanted to do, I had just kind of let fade to nothing. So I decided I could live with crash and burn failure, but I wasn't going to be able to live with a slow fade to black. So that's when I got, you know, really serious about my writing. And the novel that I started when I was in college, I finished within a year and a half of that, that moment of becoming serious about my writer, being a writer. Because like, you know, what do you got to do to be a writer, right? You just have to write. That's all you have to do. You don't have to talk about it or think about it. You just have to write. So that's kind of the, that's the abridged version. But in fact, that first novel, the one that I started when I was 19 years old and finished when I was 29, would go on to be my first published novel. So, and then fast forward this past week, I just started my 20th novel. So I've been published since 2002, and that's the short answer.
It's a short answer, but it's a great answer. I love hearing fellow authors, especially ones who are well established like yourself. I love hearing how people get where they are. And I can so relate to so much of what I was nodding my head the whole time. Video viewers will see, but the audio listeners aren't going to know. I was nodding the whole time. Yeah. I can relate to so much of that, especially the part about having a job that you're dedicating. I was a trial paralegal for 22 years before I quit.
Yeah, that's a big job.
Author coaching business, and yeah. I was giving 110%. I'm like, yeah. I'm getting paid $40,000 a year to do it. And I'm like, eh. So I totally relate to that. So
yeah, for sure.
Yes. Okay. So this week's topic for discussion is creating complex, realistic, and relatable protagonists. And truth be told, I actually snagged the words complex and realistic from a rave review that I found about you as a writer that was written in the Sun Review. So it's not all original. Let's begin where all authors begin when it comes to creating their protagonist. Tell us how you first come up with your protagonist, like Serena from Confessions on the 745.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I stopped a long time ago thinking about characters as people that I create and started thinking about them as people that I meet. Because to be honest, that's really more how it works for me. So let me tell you a little bit about my process, which is kind of crazy. Most novels start with like a germ, right? There's an idea, there's like a spark or a seed. And it could be from anything. It might be a news story. It could be a line of poetry. In one case, it was a piece of junk mail. And it usually gets me excited or thinking about something. I become like sort of semi-obsessed with something that is interesting me. And so I wind up doing like just a slew of research. So I wind up just researching, and, you know, sort of thinking on a certain topic. And the best way I can explain it is if it connects with something deeper that's going on with me, then I will start to hear a character voice or voices. And for me, everything flows from those voices, like all plot flows from character. So once I start having that feeling and I start hearing that voice, then I know that there's a novel and I'll have a voice or voices. And I literally follow those voices through the narrative. So I write without an outline. I don't know what's going to happen day to day. I don't know who's going to show up or what they're going to do. And I definitely don't know how the book is going to end. Because if I did, I wouldn't be able to write it. So this is how I have flowed through each and every one of my novels.
And 20 of them.
20 of them. Okay. Well, 19 so, and counting.
I 19 guess. And plus. 19 and half. So exactly. It works for you, which is what's important. And we talk about that all the time in my author coaching business, how you have to find your own method. You have to, I mean, within reason, obviously.
Yeah, really. I mean, I think it's really true. And I don't think you can choose one way or the other. I mean, certainly within the industry, there seem to be two pretty distinct camps. Plotters. You know, you have the plotters, but I don't like the word pantsers because to me that seems like, oh, I accidentally wrote 19 novels, which is definitely not the case, right? I mean, not at all.
Fill out.
But it's more like we're gardeners.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like there's a seed and a germ and it starts to grow and you water it, you prune it, you know, you're there, you're present for it. You're helping it sort of kind of become what it's going to be. And that's sort of how I feel about the book more than like a pantser, like, oh, I'm just flying by the seat of my pants, which I think is very telling because like you know, because gardeners don't make fun of plotters. Like, we understand why you want to do it, but plotters make fun of gardeners. So I kind of think there might be a little bit of, like, you know, jealousy there, maybe professional jealousy. Most of us,
most of us
who have been writing since we were kids write this way.
I'm going to agree with you, and I'm going to give you a confession while we're at it. I know we're going to take 2 minutes detour here. So I'm a pantser turned plotter, but it's because, but when I say plotter, I use the term very loosely, and
right.
Kind of sketch out what's generally going to happen. I do the three act structure, and that's kind of about it. Mm-hmm. So I'm somewhere in the middle. But you're right. I do believe there's some professional jealousy there, because I've said it. I've said, you know, I really do admire and I'm jealous a little bit of those who can just sit down and type it up. So yep. I have to admit that you're right on that one.
But I also don't think there's that big a difference between the two ways. It's just a matter of timing, right? Yeah. It's just a matter of how your idea evolves. Like the plotter, the idea is going to evolve over a much shorter period of time. It's going to be a sketch. And the gardener it takes a little bit longer, but the process, I think, essentially is the same. I mean, you're still doing all the different development. It's just a different way. You're doing it as you go. They're setting up a scaffolding that they're going to use to build the book. And I know that many of the writers that I admire, you know, fall into both camps. You know, there is mm-hmm. no one I could point to say, well, it doesn't work. You know, look at this person, like, or it does work. Look at this person. Like, you can look at both techniques and find many writers of great success within each camp.
And it all boils down to having to decide what works best for you within certain boundaries, but yes.
Exactly.
Okay. So once you have decided on the right protagonist for your book, tell us what the process looks like. So I know you said that the protagonists or the characters lead the story. I love that. But tell us what the process does look like. I know you said you don't do any plotting, but do you approach the development of the protagonist any differently than the other important characters? Like, is there any special way you treat your protagonist?
Well, I mean, usually, you know, that's the voice, right? And it might be a very urgent, like, sort of present tense voice that I hear. It may be a number of, like, sort of, you know, third person omniscient voices. It really depends on the book. I don't personally feel like I have a ton of control over that, even though, of course, I do. I don't experience it that way. So when I hear this voice and I know that this voice is important and has a story to tell, I definitely just kind of listen, you know, and I listen with my fingers, you know, I'm listening, you know, onto the keyboard. And I feel like my relationship with my characters, you know, most especially the protagonist, that's going to be usually the most intimate relationship of the book. You know, that's going to be the person with whom I'm spending the most time, the person whose perspective is, you know, the most relevant to the book. Although I would say in Confessions on the 745 that Selena and Pearl both had, you know, I had very important relationships with both of them, which I think is why it kind of wove into each other so well. But I, you know, I definitely think of my relationship to my characters as the same as any relationship that I would have with any person. You know, when you start a friendship or you start a relationship with somebody, you learn about each other in layers. You know, the first thing you know is like, oh, this is what this person looks like. And oh, this is what, you know, oh, she drinks coffee and tea or tea or whatever. And like, you find these little details. And as you get deeper and deeper into the story of that person's life, then you see more and more and more of that person, right? Like, all of our relationships unfold in layers. And I don't see really any difference between what the people that I meet in real life and the people that I meet on the page.
I love that.
So of course, it's not 100% the truth of it, right? Because I am the author. I have spent my life dedicated to study and to honing a craft that I have been practicing since I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And so every character is an amalgamation of my observations, my ideas, my prejudice, my research, my things I've overheard, pieces of people that I just don't understand and I'm trying to figure out. Like all of this stuff is like a, you know, it, all of that is a part of those characters. There are slivers of myself in, you know, in any one of my characters, you might see a shade of me. Mm-hmm. And that is, you know, that is the nature of fiction writing. You know, that is just that's just how it works. If you're writing from that authentic space, if you're actually writing the thing you want to be writing and you're listening to the voices and you're practicing your craft, always digging deeper, always trying to get better, always looking for that detail or that that essence that's going to communicate something really important to your reader. As long as you're working from that place, then it all kind of work. It all kind of works together. There's no way to parse out. For me, here's the plot, here's the setting, here's the character. There's no way for it to be a separate entity. Everything is going to come together as one piece of cloth that I'm weaving, which is not helpful at all. I know.
Yes, it is. Believe it or not, it actually is. No, especially when, and I want to emphasize something you said about meeting people, like treating your characters the way you do people that you meet in your real life, right. How there's layers and you slowly develop different ideas about them over time. Because I mean, even think about the best friend that you have. You didn't learn all the things you know today.
Exactly.
That very first day. So that's you. That was a very helpful answer, actually, because that was a very good point. So, yes. And speaking of doing that, in Confessions on the 745, you pulled that off massively with Serena, I think. So her husband was having an affair with a nanny, and she tells the woman that she meets on the train, and I don't want to give too much away, but she tells the woman on the train that she suspects of this affair, when in reality, she knows full well about it because she did catch them on the nanny cam, but she didn't fire her because she values Geneva. So can you talk about this a bit and how important this went, I'm assuming, to show that Serena is a complex and multi-layered protagonist?
Yeah, Selena is a very, you know, she's a very, she's like a character or like a person that we all kind of know in some ways. Like she's mm-hmm. like sort of the superwoman that this culture is so great at, you know, pushing out there. You know, you've got the big job, you've got the kids, you've got the house, you've got the husband. And, you know, she is very invested in the surface of her life. And that's kind of what I knew about her a little bit at the beginning.
Okay.
So she's had this, you know, she's had this like, you know, she's had this moment, you know, she's in this marriage, you know, she's got this idea of herself as, you know, she even says it in the book, like that she's Instagrammable Selena, you know? Like she, you know, she's very skilled at putting out an image of herself. And I think this is something that we can all look to and relate to. Like, you know, it's like you look on social media and you see all these like filtered and curated versions of everybody's life. And we all know that that's not their real life, right? Like we all know that real life is lived in between those Instagram mm-hmm. posts, right? And like, so that's sort of like, she's put up this, this image of herself, and it's so powerful. And she's so invested in it that she's kind of allowed her this rot in her life to like sort of fester, and her relationship, which everyone's like, oh, you know, Graham and Selena, so, you know, so beautiful, such beautiful children, so successful. It's actually, you know, very different, a very different reality. So when she come, you know, when she at the beginning of the book, when she's literally watching her husband and the nanny, have sex.
Yeah, great moment, by the way.
On the IKEA activity rug that they picked out together for very different activities, I'm sure. And she's there and she's watching it and she's like, you know, metabolizing it in a way that I think more people would metabolize it than you would imagine, because mm-hmm. you, here you are, you're a working mom, your husband is basically just like not doing anything, he's home, he lost his job, or he, you know, and he's like finding himself or whatever, and yet you still have to have a nanny, and you know you can't leave him with the kids, and you still have to work because somebody has to work. And so you're like, you know, to just to be with her in that moment, like, and have watch her be able to press it press it down, like all the rage, all the sadness, all the betrayal, just press it down and just be like, okay, yeah, shut the laptop, you know, whatever. And that she has this darkness, this secret, and she can't share it with anyone. She can't share it with her mom because she doesn't want to be just like her mom. She can't share it with her sister because, you know, then she's as imperfect and flawed as her sister, who's just had a divorce and she's really invested in having been perfect. And so, you know, there's that moment, that like sort of dark, ugly moment on the train where she's had something to drink that she shouldn't have had, and it's dark and she's sitting with this stranger. And that's the moment where she reveals herself. And then she's very sorry. Very sorry afterwards.
Very sorry. Without spoiling anything, she's very sorry.
Yeah, she's very sorry. Yeah.
Thank you for that little kind of inside glimpse into like your mindset when you were writing that scene with Selena. I keep saying Serena. I know I've said it three times now.
That's so,
I know somebody named Serena, so it keeps slipping. Selena, that scene of watching on the nanny cam, I read it similarly, but to hear you explain her thoughts, it puts it in a different light. So it's always very interesting to hear an author's take on a scene when you've read it a different way, or not differently, but just in a different light, sort of.
Yeah. So. And I feel like, I mean, and that's where I am when I'm writing, you know, like I'm inside it, mm-hmm. right? Like I'm in there with that, you know, I'm not looking, I'm not above looking down. I'm not moving chess pieces on a board. I'm in it. It's almost like a form of, method acting for me.
Oh, you that's know, a good point.
I am just, you know, I'm just in there, and it's very easy for me to, you know, if you treat your characters with empathy, if you treat them like you treat your best friend, mm-hmm. then they reveal all.
So true. And what a perfect note to take a quick break on. I have to take just a minute to hear from our sponsor, and then we'll come right back. We'll wrap up our conversation. I just have a couple more questions for you, and we'll go from there. So hold on just one moment and we'll be right back.
If you're listening to this episode on the day that it's released, February 19th, 2021, this message is for you. Well, if you're not listening to this episode at that date, but it's a later date, don't worry. I have something for you too. So hold on to your horses and bear with me for about 60 seconds. Then I think everyone's going to walk away with something of value. Sound good? Okay. Tomorrow, which is going to be February 20th, is the absolute drop dead deadline for signing up to virtually attend our 5-day Facebook challenge event, which is totally free for everyone. Everyone. It's called Best Book Blueprint. Nail your story idea and prepare to write your best book, even if you're totally stuck, in only 5 days. And through this challenge, I'm going to provide you with all the advice, tips, and tricks that I typically only give my clients who are enrolled in my author coaching program. I'm also going to help you go from story idea, even if you don't have one yet, to ready to write in just 5 days. Now, why do we need 5 days? I can hear it now. Why can't we just start writing? Easy peasy. The number one biggest mistake that authors make, according to almost all the experts, is that they just dive in and begin writing without first figuring out a few things. And I'm not going to try to convert pantsers to plotters here. Don't worry about that. I'm simply going to show you some steps that you may not have realized you missed, but if you do cover them, you'll wind up writing faster, writing better, and your book will have a much better chance at success. This I can guarantee you. I've proven this myself with my own novels and through my clients that I've coached for over 10 years. And again, it is totally free. If you can't attend, don't worry, still register, and you'll get the entire playback file Friday afternoon in your email inbox. To sign up, all you have to do is click the link in the show notes for this episode, today's episode, and enter your name and your email, and that's it. We'll take care of the rest. Now, I promise those of you who are hearing this message after February 21st, because I know it'll happen, something special as well. And true to my word, here it is. I'm offering you guys an exclusive discount code. Please don't share. Quantities are limited. To take my start to finish online writing course, which walks you through my entire coaching process,
from idea conception all the way through publishing and even some early marketing tactics at a discounted rate. The course is called Best Book Method, How to Write, Publish, and Sell Your Own Books. It covers three sections, which are before, during, and after you write, 22 lessons, 22 video tutorials, and gosh, at least 20 downloadable resources that you can save and use as many times as you want. It launches March 1st and everyone else is paying the full price, which is already much more affordable than, oh my gosh, all the other expert courses out there are closer to $500, $1,000. Ours is only $297 without the discount. But with this exclusive code, you will get 20% off of the enrollment fee if paid in full. Now, there is also an option to pay over 3 monthly payments at the regular rate if you want to do that. But the 20% applies to paid in full. Be ready. I'm about to give you the code. So write it down, add it to your phone notes, whatever, because I'm not releasing this code anywhere online. You ready? Okay. The code is all in caps, BLUEPRINT20. So that's BLUEPRINT20, the numbers. Simply click on the link in the show notes to hit that enrollment page, and you can pre-register for the course now. All right, now that I've given everybody a little something special, let's get back to my chat with Lisa Unger. Okay, we're back in the studio with Lisa Unger, and we're going to wrap up our conversation that I don't really want to wrap up because it's been so enlightening and so entertaining. But I do have one more topic-related question for you, Lisa. I just kind of earlier brushed over the mention of voice when creating protagonist earlier somewhere, I think. But let's dive a little bit into voice with character. So tell my listeners how you create protagonists. I know you told us a little bit about that, with such rich and distinct voices. And what are some practical tips that you can kind of throw out there for our authors that are listening to use to ensure their characters are heard clearly like yours are?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's, again, it's going to be another sort of nebulous answer because I don't make a lot of decisions.
Right.
Do you know, like, I don't say, oh, I want this character to be like this, or I want this character to be like that. Mm-hmm. I think that the key to authentic characterization and in that way, the key to authentic voice, because the idea of voice is indivisible from character, right? Like, mm-hmm. No matter whether you're speaking in first person, for, you know, if the character is speaking to you in first person or second person or third person omniscient, like, you know, voice is something that is can be a little bit nebulous, right? But it's intricately woven into the character itself. And so my best advice for creating authentic character is for them to be as real to you as the other people in your life are. It's like, you don't get your aunt confused with your grandmother, confused with your best friend, confused with the gardener. You don't confuse those people. Why not? And they're all very distinct in your mind. They look different. They sound different. You know, like, okay, if I go to my dad, he's going to give me this advice. If I go to my brother, he's going to give me this advice. If I go to my mom, she's going to give me this advice. You know these people so intimately, you almost don't need even to call them and ask them what they're going to say because you already know, right? And so the same
is anyway, for self-flagellation, if nothing else.
That's right. If you want to be punished, call your mother.
Yeah, yeah,
like, exactly. whatever it is. So like you don't, for me, like when I have a slew of characters, and even, you know, Pearl, who is very, very complex and had a number of different presentations mm-hmm. on the page, I was never confused about who she was or where she was in her role because she was very real to me and I understood what her genesis was. Like mm-hmm. I understood what her, you know, what she was doing. So I think that empathy is a really important one. I heard Meryl Streep interviewed about her role in The Iron Lady, and that she was mm-hmm. asked, like, how could you so inhabit this person who is so utterly different from you? And she said that she believed that within every person is the germ of every other person. And that it is really easy to imagine people and have empathy for them and their motivations and to inhabit that. And it really struck me when I heard it, because that's exactly the way I feel about writing. So it's, first of all, it's empathy. And by that, I mean, like, you know, I don't mean sympathy. I don't mean pity. I mean, a deep understanding of your character and why she does the things that she does, right? And then beyond that, you know, I think that the writer, first and foremost, is an observer. I think we take in, you know, more details than most other people. And this is a very important place to be as a writer, you know. So I would, this is, you know, this kind of veers a little bit into creativity. Like, I would be spending a good deal of energy not filling blank moments in your life, not staring at your phone all the time, not losing yourself in social media, but being present in the world and listening to the conversations you hear, observing the people in your life, you know, observing your own feelings about things, your own motivations, you know, trying to understand in a really compassionate way the motivations of the other people in your life. Why is she doing this? Why is she acting this way? You know, be a student of human psychology. You know, do the research, like, why, you know, how does trauma affect this type of person? How does childhood abuse manifest in this situation? If a girl is in her parents' marriage, there's infidelity, how does this come forward into her adult life most usually? And so, you know, you have to become a empathetic and a studious sort of observer of human nature. And in doing that, in having that knowledge of people, then that will automatically help you to create more authentic, pitch perfect characters.
Drop mic. That is so good. I mean, that is really, and what you said too, I wanted to circle back to about, you know, to answer your, the way that you answered the question was perfect for me, because one point is you said you don't confuse, you know, the different people in your lives. And so don't confuse the characters or whatever with a distinctive voice. Guess what? You pull it off. And you were talking about Pearl, for example. And I was sitting there thinking, that's exactly right. Because I didn't get Pearl confused. I didn't get any of the characters confused, even though you had it written in multiple points of view. And some, they were complex characters, each one of them. Mm-hmm. So that's a very good point. And so I will say this, anybody, especially students of suspense writing, if you haven't read Lisa Unger's work, you need to go do that. So before we go, Lisa, do you have any parting words of wisdom or advice for newer authors who are listening to this episode and they want to create a protagonist who's complex, realistic, and relatable?
Well, certainly in terms of character, you know, I would say to look within, you know, don't, you know, like a lot of new writers, you know, a lot of new artists in general, you know, will do a lot of imitation, and that's okay. That's how you learn to put the words down onto the page, to do a lot of reading. So I would say the first word of advice is to just read the people who are doing it the best of anyone. Just read those people and try, and don't just read for your own personal enjoyment, which is great, but read as a student.
You're taking all, you're saying exactly what I say to my author coaching clients every single day.
Perfect. Me as a student, why is this great? Why? How do I feel? Why do I love this? Why is this character who is purely, who's like basically diabolical, why do I still care about her? Right? Like, why am I still sort of secretly rooting for her? Or like, whatever it is, like, you have to read like a student. And, you know, and don't look outside yourself for that voice, for that, the voice is within. So when you follow like sort of that high energy vibration, the stuff that interests you, the things that you really are passionate about, the things you want to write about, follow that high energy vibration and see what happens, you know, when you sit down to the page, even without an idea. Right. See what happens when you sit down with like something that you're fascinated by and or someone that you're fascinated by or something, and see what happens when you sit down to the page. And, you know, the other thing I always do try to say this because I think it's really important, you know, just in general about publishing and about craft, you know, I think that, you know, no matter where you are, like as a published writer, whether you're, you know, a bestseller, an award winner, whatever it is, any author that you're looking at that you're like, wow, I so admire him or her. And I wish I could be like her. And I wish, you know, I wish I could write like her. I think that it's important to remember that every single one of those writers was at one point sitting alone in a room with a manuscript that they weren't sure was good enough. And it's a difficult road to get published. It should not be your goal. Your goal should be to get better every day. That's still my goal after 20 books. I want to be better today than I was yesterday. That should be your only goal. You shouldn't be worried about publishing, but you should know that everybody who is published, award-winning and best-selling, was at one point an inspiring writer, and they all made it. And so that's an important thing, I think, to remember, because, you know, like, usually it's the opposite. Like, you know, oh, it's so hard. Oh, it'll, you know, whatever. It is, but it's possible.
Perfect note to end on. Thank you so much, Lisa, for sharing that with us. But before we go, if you want us to, why don't you give my listeners a way to follow and get updates, your website, any social handles, whatever you want us to know.
Absolutely. I'm incredibly easy to find. I have a website, lisaunger.com. I'm on Twitter at Lisa Unger, Instagram at LA Unger, and Facebook at author Lisa Unger. And if you go on my website and you sign up for my newsletter, you will get a free short story. And then I try to put writing tips in every newsletter.
Perfect.
At least I'm talking about what I'm writing. And sometimes I'm talking about writing tips and what's inspired me or where I've been stuck and how I kind of get through it and all that. So I've been trying to incorporate that more into my newsletter. So for aspiring writers, I always try to make sure there's something in there for them.
Good. That's perfect. All right, Lisa, thank you so much. I don't want to end this, but we got us. So we both have lives to live. I think we can't stay on the podcast all day. So, all right. Thank you so much for joining us on the show. And I hope we can do this again soon. And good luck with what you're working on now, number 20.
Yeah. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
All right, guys. Wasn't that great? And I'm telling you, I was totally having a panicky fangirl moment for days, up until the call with Lisa actually started. But as you could hear, within a minute or two, she had me so at ease with her calm and kind presence. Could you guys tell how friendly and approachable she really is? She certainly put me at ease. Beyond that, hearing one of the masters of the art of writing suspense give away her best advice on writing compelling and unique protagonists, like those she creates in her own best-selling novels, it's totally priceless. But I hope you guys took notes, listened intently, or even replayed this episode, because this week was absolute gold. And I highly encourage you to visit Lisa's website and sign up for her newsletter, as well as going to find her online and follow her on social accounts that she lists for us there at the end. You never know, you may just wind up getting a follow back from one of the world's current masters in the realm of writing suspense novels. And before you go, as always, I'm going to ask you a huge favor. Please hit that subscribe button so we can keep bringing you the great episodes like this one, and you'll never miss one episode simply because your notification on your phone or desktop didn't go off. Plus, this does help us stay relevant and high on the search list when people seek podcasts for writers. So doing this can help you, and it can help give our little show for the past two seasons and keep bringing you guests like amazing Lisa Unger. And don't worry, we have more huge authors and scheduled throughout the season. Another reason that you want to hit that subscribe button. And next week, hopefully I will not sound like a dying frog and I will make more sense, but I definitely didn't want you all to miss out on Lisa this week. So here you go. That's all the time we have for this week's episode, and I've got to go take a nap. So stay tuned for next week's episode with yet another well-known, established, and best-selling author, where we will tackle yet another writing subject for authors so you can learn from the masters to write your own best book. Talk soon. This is what you've been waiting for.